This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on African News Tonight.
These include mass killings, widespread and systematic rape and sexual violence against women and girls, deliberate starvation, forced displacement, and large-scale arbitrary detention. These amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity.
That was Mohamed Chande Othman, chairman of the UN's Commission of Human Rights on Ethiopia, on their investigation into violence in northern Ethiopia. Details coming up also. Today is the 10th year anniversary of a deadly attack by Somali al-Shabaab on shopping mall in Nairobi. And Morocco is budgeting almost $23 billion to help the country recover a 6.8 magnitude earthquake. These stories and more on African News Tonight. So we start with our top story. Violence and insecurity are plaguing northern parts of Nigeria, according to CIPP, Mercy Corps Community Initiative to Promote Peace. To brief us on the matter, we have in studio CIPP leaders David Gatare, Chief of Party, and Amina Bello, Gender Equality and Social Inclusion Manager. So this violence, David, has flared in that area for the last 30 years. Let me start with you by asking you, what is driving this violence and what is Mercy Corps doing about it?
Thank you, and welcome, listeners. Mercy Corps is an international organization that is powered by the belief that a better world is possible. We work in over 40 countries in the whole world, delivering both humanitarian and development assistance. We came from Nigeria, and Nigeria, a country of vast opportunities, but also plagued with a lot of conflict. And based on the research that we have done, there are key drivers of conflict. The first one is resource-based conflicts, then inter-ethnic divisions, then you have politically motivated conflicts, and then lastly you have those that are driven by banditry and kidnapping. For Mercy Corps, we have interventions that are dealing with these conflicts. Mainly they are centered around peace building, empowering communities with economic opportunities, water security, and then food security. Specifically for CIPP, which is a USAID-funded project, the work we do is empowering communities to be able to mediate their disputes, and then also secondary using dialogues to bring people together to dialogue on their own issues, empowering women and youth to deal with these conflicts, and strengthening early warning and early response mechanisms, and lastly, countering the fake news using media. So that's basically what we do.
Let me go to Amina Bello, Gender Equality and Social Inclusion Manager. So, Amina, you are the Gender Equality and Social Inclusion Manager. Talk to us about your mission, your stated goal, and what achievements have you done so far?
Thank you very much, and hello, listeners. We're happy to be here. I have to start by saying that Mercy Corps as an organization is committed to promoting a safe, diverse, and inclusive communities. And I must say that as part of our commitment to gender equality, we are deliberate about centering the needs and priorities of the communities we work with, particularly the most marginalized within them, including women and youth. In all that we do, we empower marginalized groups to be able to participate meaningfully in decision-making and also to contribute to, you know, a more secure and resilient communities. through a USAID-funded program called Community Initiatives to Promote Peace, with David as just mentioned, we are providing a platform for women, for youth to be able to, you know, participate meaningfully in peace processes. I have to say that women face enormous barriers, you know, which impede their participation in peace building, which undermine their social, economic, and political rights. And the program is addressing this by really providing that women-only platform for women to be able to engage in processes that contribute to peace in their community, and most importantly, to be able to provide valuable contributions to addressing youth restiveness, to addressing drivers of violent conflict in their communities. Another important aspect that we should talk about is also the male engagement, considering that the context where we work, we have restrictive social norms, which really makes it difficult for women to be able to participate in decision making. We also train women on mediation, what we people popularly call alternative dispute resolution, so that women are able to participate in dispute resolution mechanisms. As we celebrate the International Day of Peace, you will agree with me that ensuring that we are promoting women's full and equal access, you know, to decision making, promoting their participation in all aspects of peace building has become critical. And I have to say to our audience that as we celebrate this important day, it's important that we reflect on our individual and collective efforts towards promoting peace. And I have to say that addressing gender inequality, marginalization, and pervasive injustice are all critical to promoting a safe, diverse, and inclusive communities.
Restrictive social norms. Could you expound on that? Because in Africa, that is a very that's a very high hurdle to actually climb. The restrictive social norms in Africa are very so strong. How do you overcome that?
Thank you very much. When you look at the dispute resolution mechanism, for example, in the context where we work, it is male dominated, because a woman is also expected to play a role in that domain. It is male dominated. And so what CIPP is doing is to provide a platform for women to be able to learn leadership skills, because over time they've been excluded from that structure. So they do not have the skills, the leadership skills, to be able to really play a meaningful role in that domain. So we provide that platform for them to be able to, you know, play a leadership role in peace processes, but again, linking them to the community dispute resolution mechanisms, so that they are able to work closely with community leaders, they are able to work with communities to identify the underlying causes and drivers of conflict, to be able to also design locally led solutions to addressing the drivers of conflict in their communities. So it's the platform we are providing, and also the linkage with dispute resolution structures in their communities, and also helping them to be able to engage policy and decision makers, so they are able to advocate for government to address or become more responsive to their needs and priorities.
And last word to David Gatari. Yes. Anything you'd like to add, please?
Yes, and as we celebrate the International Independence Day, there is right at the end of the channel. As long as we continue to strengthen the alternative dispute resolution mechanism for communities to be able to address their disputes, we just conducted the research on can mediation work in reducing violence. Yes, it can. So investment in that area is very critical. Investing in women and youth to lead the processes of peace building is important. We've seen it works. And then economic empowerment of these structures is very important. And lastly, deal with trauma healing that is associated with conflicts.
CIPP leaders David Gatari, Chief of Party, and Amina Bello, Gender Equality and Social Inclusion Manager, thank you for being with us today. Thank you for your input.
Thank you so much. Happy International Peace Day.
More than 140 leaders and state representatives from around the world have descended on New York to address the annual United Nations General Assembly under the theme Rebuilding Trust and Reigniting Global Solidarity. Paul Nanatulia, research associate at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, tells me that given the many challenges Africa is facing this year's assembly is very critical.
I think it's an important General Assembly in the sense that it occurs at a critical time internationally and also for the African continent, given the issues of climate change and the effects of climate change that we're seeing in different parts of Africa. The complaint by African countries that 17 of the hotspots in the world are in Africa, and yet Africa contributes far less than any other region to contributing to environmental damage. So that is the one issue. You then have wars, you have coups that have taken place and which are now seem to be occurring at a much more frequent rate, which is extremely alarming for the African peace and security architecture. You also have economies that have sustained significant damage as a result of COVID-19, and these economies are still struggling. You have the war in Ukraine, which is affecting African countries in a very direct way in terms of food security, in terms of energy prices. I was in Tanzania for about a month, and I could see a huge jump in prices at the petrol pump, and everybody is complaining about that. So it's a critical UN General Assembly, and African countries are so far, just by listening to the speeches that have been given by President Ramaphosa and other presidents, there are quite a number of issues, I think, that African countries are trying to put on the table.
President Bola Tinubu just called for more direct investment in Africa.
Yes, more investment in Africa, more investment by the more powerful countries in the north to make good of their pledges to support African countries to mitigate the effects of climate change. Those pledges have not been realized. There's also a push by African countries, again, for the reform of the United Nations, in particular the Security Council, to be more representative of the world as it is, given that the greater burden of conflicts in the world today are in Africa and other parts of the global south. So the call for comprehensive reform of the United Nations and the Security Council in particular. Some countries have also tried to market the continent as a safe and exciting and dynamic destination for investment, despite all the problems the continent is going through. And so some delegations have really talked, including the South African delegation, which is an all-women delegation, by the way, have talked about the African Continental Free Trade Area and the need for greater investment. So I guess it's a mixed bag. There's a lot of apprehension, but at the same time, there's a lot that African countries are expecting to get out of this particular General Assembly.
And Paul, lastly, you said you were in East Africa very recently. Mm-hmm. What about Sudan? It's turning to be a failed state.
Yes, correct. Sudans are dangerously moving towards becoming failed states. And so this is one of the pressure points. I think that that African stakeholders are going to be putting a lot of pressure on the different delegations that are going at the United Nations General Assembly to prioritize these issues, because conflicts seem to be metastasizing. Sudan, of course, has been through a number of coups, and now it seems to be, teetering on the verge of a full-blown civil war. And that instability extends all the way into the Sahel and all the way up to West Africa. I mean, so yes, these are demands that are being made, and I think the real challenge now for the delegations of the United Nations General Assembly will be, how do African countries respond to popular demands and aspirations coming from citizens? I think that is the big issue. Of course, there are other delegations. I mean, we tend to focus a lot on government delegations, but there are other delegations that are at the UN General Assembly as well. NGOs, civil society, there are going to be many meetings on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly. So it will be interesting to see how African countries take note of these meetings and try and meet their citizens halfway. I think the message that is coming from Africa is that it cannot be business as usual.
That was Paul Nanatulia, Research Associate at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies in Washington, speaking to me from Washington, D.C. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. To mark the International Day of Peace, rights groups issued a report accusing both Cameroon government troops and English-speaking separatist fighters of grave atrocities in the conflict. Moki Edwin-Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
The report says Cameroon government troops arbitrarily burned civilian homes and illegally detained dozens of youths in the country's restive English-speaking northwest and southwest regions. The Cameroon Database of Atrocities and the Center for Human Rights and Democracy in Africa published the report to mark the United Nations International Day of Peace on Thursday. The report also says Anglophone separatist fighters set fire to trucks carrying food supplies and detonated bombs at a market and at a foot race. The report alleges separatists also burned a school, a mayor's home, and a church, and held civilians for ransom for a month. Félix Agbobala is a human rights lawyer and founder of the Center for Human Rights and Democracy in Africa.
We published this report to highlight the crimes against humanity committed by both parties to the conflict. It's important for us to understand that when there is a conflict, basic human rights and international humanitarian law must be respected. Civilians who are not taking any active part in hostility should not be a target. These gruesome crimes committed must be held accountable to end the culture of impunity.
Bala said he wants to raise awareness on the International Day of Peace, adding, there must be a holistic solution to end the conflict in Cameroon's English-speaking western regions. He says news media do not widely report on the conflict, and some international observers consider it the most underreported conflict in the world. Separatists acknowledge that some of their fighters have committed crimes, but say most crimes are committed by government troops. Capo Daniel is the leader of the Ambazonia People's Rights Advocacy Platform, one of Cameroon's separatist groups. He says many separatist groups have committed abuses.
On our camp in Ambazonia, we have seen hardliners that have pushed policies to the extremes, which have exacerbated some of the excesses of our fighters, which we have condemned. We continue to call on all of our soldiers to uphold the Geneva Convention, despite the factioning of our struggle.
The Cameroon military has not responded to the report, but the government has always said that aside from a few minor abuses, its troops have remained professional and respect human rights. The international advocacy group Human Rights Watch last year accused Cameroon separatists of increasing brutal attacks on civilians, including murders and abductions. Human Rights Watch also says it has documented violations by government troops against separatist fighters and civilians, including killings and kidnappings of civilians and attacks on schools. Tensions between the Cameroon government and Western separatists escalated to armed conflict in 2017. English-speaking separatists want to carve out an independent state from the French-majority nation. The international crisis group estimates the conflict has killed about 6,000 people and displaced more than 700,000. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
African heads of state and youth leaders focused on the continent's needs yesterday at the United Nations General Assembly, with many calling for support of the UN's 2030 Agenda and Sustainable Development Goals. One African president called for a stepped-up withdrawal of UN peacekeeping forces from his country, while others urged leaders to quickly answer calls for help after disasters. VOA's Carol Van Dam has more.
The speech of Libya's Minister of Youth, Fatala Af Al-Zouni, came a week and a half after floods devastated the coastal city of Derna. He appealed for the world to live up to its responsibility to Libya to help with the aftermath of the disaster. Al-Zouni also says it is necessary to hold free elections in Libya, a country mired in civil war and political instability for years. The Democratic Republic of Congo's president wants the world's second-largest UN peacekeeping force to move up its departure from the country beginning this December. He said it has failed to rein in conflicts in the eastern part of the country. In his address, President Felix Tshisekedi said the 17,000-strong peacekeeping mission had been unable to confront the conflicts in eastern Congo, which he said are tearing apart the Central African nation. Tshisekedi also called for expanding the UN Security Council seats to include the African Union.
Les peuples africains ne comprennent pas souvent l'attitude équivoque, la politique de deux poids, deux mesures. Les ambiguïtés et atermoiements
he says African peoples do not often understand what he called the double standards at work, the ambiguities and the procrastination at the UN, especially in its Security Council, to political and security crises in Africa. Tshisekedi said this is notably the case in the forgotten crisis of Western Sahara, which has driven apart two kindred countries, Algeria and the Kingdom of Morocco. Nano Addo Dankwa Afudo Kado, the president of Ghana, said the theme of this year's session, rebuilding trust and reigniting global solidarity, is an acknowledgement that things are not what they ought to be in our world. Irregular migration has been a major topic at the General Assembly. Italy's prime minister urged the UN to launch a global war without mercy against migrant smugglers after a surge of arrivals on the island of Lampedusa. In her speech, Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni said Italy is ready to lead efforts against what she calls the slave traders of the third millennium. Many of the migrants trying to reach Europe come from Africa, often risking their lives to make the journey due to deadly conflicts at home, lack of jobs, or climate change. Carol Van Dam for VOA News, Washington.
United Nations investigators accuse all parties to the conflict in Ethiopia of widespread atrocities in northern Ethiopia, many amounting to war crimes and crimes against humanity, despite a peace agreement signed nearly a year ago. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The three-member Commission of Human Rights Experts on Ethiopia presented a blistering 21-page report on the deteriorating situation in northern Ethiopia to the United Nations Human Rights Council today. In presenting the report, Commission Chair Mohamed Chande Othman warned the failure of last year's agreement to end hostilities threatens the country's peace and stability. He said the Commission's investigation clearly shows the Ethiopian government and forces under its control, as well as Eritrean forces in Ethiopia, continue to commit serious violations and atrocities throughout the northern region.
The Ethiopian National Defense Forces, Eritrean Defense Forces, regional forces, allied militia perpetrated violations in Tigray on a staggering scale. These include mass killings, widespread and systematic rape and sexual violence against women and girls, deliberate starvation, forced displacement, and large-scale arbitrary detention. These amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity.
Othman said Tigray forces and allied militias also have committed gross violations against civilians in the Amhara and Afar regions, some amounting to war crimes. He said grave violations have spread beyond the north of the country to the Oromia region. He added civilians there are subject to arrest, torture, sexual violence, and extrajudicial killings committed with impunity.
These atrocities, past and ongoing, regardless of the affected region or community, are having a serious and ongoing impact on survivors, victims, and their families, and have seriously eroded the fabric of society. The need for a credible, inclusive process of truth, justice, and reconciliation and healing has never been more urgent.
The Commission urged the UN Council to ensure continued robust international investigations and public reporting of the situation in Ethiopia. This advice did not sit well with Ethiopia's permanent representative at the UN in Geneva, Tsegab Kebebu. He said the Commission's report and findings were based on highly questionable He said the Commission's report and findings were based on highly questionable methodological approaches and called it professionally deficient and conspicuously political. He said the Commission failed to recognize the tremendous progress Ethiopia has made in silencing the guns following the African Union-led peace process. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Shogun Chung, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.